Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Well, good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. Today we're going to be talking about comforting messages from the afterlife with hospice nurse Mary Hill. Since her teenage years, Mary was fascinated with the concepts and mysteries surrounding death and dying. During her career as a hospice case manager and registered nurse, she offered spiritual healing practices to patients to aid them in their transitions into the afterlife. In her book, Messages from the Afterlife, Memoirs of a Hospice Nurse, Mary shares the close relationship she had with several patients and the experience she had with them visiting her after their transition into the afterlife. She also details her relationship with her mother as she declined in health and eventually passed over, coming to Hill with messages of love and wisdom. Mary Hill is a highly intuitive spiritual healer as a Reiki master, shamanic practitioner, and certified Kundalini yoga teacher. She has 13 years of experience with hospice patients as a certified hospice palliative nurse, and is now retired and living in Huntington Beach, California. So I'd love to introduce her to you, and we're going to get started. Good morning, Mary. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being my guest today. I love this topic. I was a hospice volunteer for 5 years. So this is something that I relate really well to. As I do... really a lot of the things that you talk about, because I do a lot of shows about afterlife and spirituality and just understanding that there's more out there than what we see. So tell us what the purpose of writing messages from the afterlife was. Why did you do that?
You know, I remember when I was working in my career, and I would have this frequent thought that people need to know this stuff, and it just kept coming to me, and I was having incredible experiences, and the purpose was that I wanted people to really understand that there is no death, that death is just an illusion, it's just a passage to another beautiful adventure, and I really got to learn that by watching people die, by seeing the experience of, you know, transitioning. And I knew it was a beautiful thing and it wasn't anything to fear.
And you are absolutely right, and I think that's a great reason for putting your book out there, helping people to understand that it is comforting, because I think the greatest fear is death. And when we understand that there is no death, then really we have very little to fear. So, so tell us a little bit about what it was like working as a hospice nurse.
Oh, wow. That's a great question, because I loved it. You know, I really felt that it was a calling. I really felt that I had a gift for it. And I was actually working in the home health field. I was getting a lot of terminally ill patients, and I felt very attracted to that, but didn't really know that I could do it on a daily basis. And then circumstances brought me to the position of you know, going into hospice full time. And I just really loved being of service. I did a lot of teaching. I loved the autonomy and the freedom that it provided by, you know, making my own schedule and just being out there and being in the homes and being with the patients and the families was a really big part of it. I loved doing home visits as opposed to going to nursing homes, because in the home visits, I got to be with the family, see the setting, being able to make a real difference. And I'm really a hugger, so I would always hug my patients. I would hug the families. And I know that brought a lot of comfort to them. And there were just so many blessings of just being of service and really making a difference at a time when they were so fragile and so vulnerable. And I was comfortable with the dying process, and so it was a perfect fit for me.
And you have to be comfortable with the dying process. You have to understand that it's, you know, and I did, that's why I did it. I mean, I could have volunteered anywhere, but I was really comfortable with the dying process as well, and I saw it really as helping them transition over, which you talk about in your book. You know, it's a transition. We call it dying, but really we're transitioning to another realm or wherever we go. So tell us a story that really stands out to you. And, just tell us a story that really stands out to you.
Oh, well, I think my favorite story was about Dennis. And so he was just a great guy, probably early 60s, and he had cancer that had spread, and I loved his family. They were just the coolest people. And so he had died on a Saturday night, and I heard about it through our voicemail system. And so the next day, Sunday, I had gone to the park to just be alone, and I had my book with me I was going to read, and I was kind of reminiscing about all the patients that I'd had, and I just needed comforting myself, especially about Dennis that just passed. And all of a sudden, there was a butterfly that kept circling around my head, and I was like, this is really weird. And I had this feeling that it was Dennis, and I said, okay, Dennis, if this is you, I want you to prove it to me and land on my outstretched hand. And the butterfly flew away just a little bit, like about 5 feet away, and then came back and brushed against my forehead and landed on my hand. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is so amazing. And then I had gone to his funeral, and there were friends of the family, and I was telling them about the story about the butterfly. And the woman that was sitting next to me said, oh, I have my own story. She said, the day that he died, or maybe the day after, there was this bird that showed up on their patio and kept pecking at the sliding door. And they were trying to shoo the bird away, and it kept coming back and coming back. And they realized that it was Dennis coming in the form of a bird. And so it was just so amazing to relate that. And you know, it just made me realize that we are never alone, and that we do come back. And I've heard this story often from other people talking, that their loved one came back in the form of, you know, a bird or a butterfly, and it's just very comforting to me, and who knows what exactly, how many times it can come back, but, you know, it's a mystery that I'm happy to just find out when my time comes. And there's other stories too, but I, you know, he was probably, you know, one of my favorite stories. And the original story, the original title of my book was going to be Butterfly Kisses. And then when my friend read the book, she said, "How attached are you to this title? Because, man, your book is all about messages from the afterlife." And I was like, "Ooh, I like that title." And so that's how it changed.
But you have a butterfly on the cover. In a hand.
Yes.
Okay.
My girlfriend, that was her artwork, and I loved the artwork, and so I said, okay, we're going with this cover.
That's very cool. Very cool. So are there any other stories that that you found interesting, or anybody, you know, what was interesting to me is you see these very sick, very helpless patients. Often they've lost a lot of weight. They may look older than they are. And when you begin to talk to them and you find out who they were and what their life was about, it's fascinating because, you know, at face value, you know, when you see them, you have no idea. But so many of these people have had such rich lives. And they love to tell you about it, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And that was one of the things that I really enjoy, really getting to know them, hearing their stories. And, you know, the elders have so much wisdom to share with us. And if we could just take the time and talk to them and really understand, you know, that they're that young person inside their body, because I feel that way too. It's like I'm still young inside my body, even though it's aging. And you're right, that the stories they have and the rich lives they led. And I used to love to, like, look at their pictures on the wall, and I would ask, you know, about the people, because that was the beauty of going into homes. You went into their private space, and people loved it, that it took interest in their lives.
Yeah, I liked going in the homes better than the nursing homes, too. It was a better, much better atmosphere because, I mean, yeah, there were a few nursing homes that were, you know, that were run well, but most of them weren't. So let's talk a little bit about your mother. You watched your mom decline over the years. What was going on with your mom?
You know, I would just say failure to thrive. She had some cardiac problems. She eventually got to the point where she needed to walk with a walker in a wheelchair, and she was on lots of meds. She was on like 15 medications, and I can remember we were going to put her on hospice, and then we went to the doctor, and I said, you know what, tomorrow hospice is coming in. Could you look at these meds and take away what she doesn't need? So he took away like half the pills, and she actually got better. So I am not a fan of pharmaceuticals. I'm totally a holistic type of girl. But, and you know, who knows? But I just know that there's a lot of side effects with medications. And you know, she was 90 when she died. And so it was around the age of 85 that she started really declining. And then it got to a point of she was in the hospital so much. She had, like, bowel problems. She had, you know, cardiac, just a lot of different things. And so, and I live in California, and she lives in Chicago. So my sisters were having the burden of, you know, all the things that were going on. But I would come in, and I remember one time I came in and, you know, I said to Mom, "Do you want to continue living like this?" And she said, "No." And I talked to her about hospice, and she said, "Oh, do I have to leave my home?" And I said, "No, they come to you." And so she was really relieved. And then we had this family meeting with my sisters, and we had a discussion, and And we all decided that hospice would be great for my mom. It was actually her decision because we said it has to be your decision. So, you know, I spent a lot of time explaining about hospice, and then we got her signed on. And I think the thing that really helped was to say to my mom, you know, just give it a try for a month. And if you don't like it, you can go back to your old plan. Nothing lost. And so once hospice came in, she absolutely loved it. She loved her nurse. And she was actually on service for about a year and a half. And it was such a positive, positive experience because my dad had somebody to call in the middle of the night. There were people that came regularly. There was so much support. It was a true blessing. And, you know, and I think that's the problem. A lot of people don't realize that they can get on hospice so much sooner. But I think that people just have this stigma against it. And it's such a shame because that was one of the frustrations of being a hospice nurse was people would come on service so, you know, so late and we'd only maybe have them on for like a week or two when they could have really benefited. So, you know, part of my purpose of writing this book was to enlighten people about what a great service it is and don't wait. And people can initiate hospice by themselves because I was the one that initiated it for my mom and I also initiated it for my dad. And that turned out to be a total blessing for my dad. So, you know, so with my mom, it was quite a process, but, you know, it was truly a blessing and all of my family was so happy that we got her on hospice. Because, you know, we really couldn't give her like a cardiac diagnosis. It was like she was just failure to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
She
was just declining. She was just declining.
Yes.
Because of her
exactly.
age. And you say that she appeared with messages of love and life lessons. So how did that happen? How did she appear to
you? Yeah. Well, the day after she died, you know, I was at my Kundalini yoga teacher training, so I wasn't in Chicago at the time. But she came to me very strong with that she's okay, she's in a beautiful place, you know, be there for my family was basically the message that I was getting because I had a fly in the next day. I actually had a flight for the very next day, and she died that Sunday, and I had a flight on Monday. So I changed my flight, and I got there. And, you know, it was just a beautiful thing with my family to be able to come together. And, you know, one of her messages to me was to bring pictures to my brother. And so so I did that, and there's a whole story about my brother, but, you know, every family's got some dynamics with family members. But the messages kept coming, and it was all about that she was okay. And I have a friend that's a medium, and so she was also channeling messages, and she saw her, you know, running through the fields of these flowers and how happy she was. And then my brother-in-law, who was very tuned in, and he was feeling her presence at the wake and her happiness. And we just kept getting messages of happiness that she was, you know, so it's in such a beautiful place. And so I was feeling it too. In spite of my grief, I was also feeling her joy of crossing. And prior to that, her and I were talking and she said, you know, I feel my angels around me. I feel my family around me. I know my time is coming. And my mother was really open to spirituality. She saw things, she saw her angels. Prior to her death, I used to do shamanic Reiki, and she really absorbed the energy. When I was doing Reiki on her one day, she saw her angel above her. She described her angel. You know, there were so many things that led up to her death. And then I was doing distant healing for her, and she was really feeling it. And I was so glad that my mom and I had that connection prior to her passing that we talked about spirituality, and I would ask her, was she afraid of dying? And she said, no, not really. I just don't want to leave you guys. And I said, Mom, you're not going to leave us. You're going to be able to come to us, and you're going to be in another dimension that's going to give you, you know, this ability to still be with us. And I think that gave her a lot of comfort.
Absolutely. You know, just because we cannot see them doesn't mean they're not with us, all around us. Did you ever have a child as a hospice patient?
Oh, no, I didn't, and I couldn't do that. I love kids so much, and the thought of a kid dying would just tear me apart. And they do actually have hospices for the younger kids. Our hospice started at the age of 18, and the youngest guy I had was in his 20s. I know he's in my book, but it's tough, you know. It's tough when people are young, you know. For me, it's like when they're old and they're in their 90s, you know, it's the cycle of life. I can accept it better. But younger people, and I did have people in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and those were really tough cases for me, because if they were leaving children, I was really hurting for the families. And I saw a lot of anticipatory grief with families. And of course, we had the social worker and spiritual counselor that can come into families' homes and help them through that process, as you well know, being at a hospice volunteer. So, I shied away from working with
right.
kids.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That's a really tough one. So you talk about plant medicine in your book, in more specifically cannabis. And you're a big proponent of it. So tell us why you like it and what you use it for.
Okay. Well, I think it's beautiful medicine, and I've done a lot of research on it. You know, like 100 years ago, that was the medicine that doctors gave. But through whatever, I don't want to get into politics and all that, but somehow they villainized it and made it bad and, you know, made it a Schedule One and just craziness of it. But in my own life, I have seen it helped me so much. It really helps me with nausea. I've had on and off things with gallbladder. I've seen it with pain. I saw my husband be in real bad pain one day, and then he took some and he was so much better. And I don't know exactly what exactly was going on with him. It's something that just passed. But, and then in my career, one of my favorite stories, and it's not in my book, was I remember a woman with cancer, and I was thinking, why is she not in pain? You know, even though we had morphine there, and I love that we can have morphine for patients that are dying, and we use it, you know, freely and as much as they need. But the son that was taking care of her, he said, this is what I have for my mom. And he had the oil, and he told me how he was giving it to her. And I was so impressed. And I'm like, yeah, go for it. You know, I mean, I couldn't be charting about this, but, you know, she was comfortable until she died. And there was this peacefulness about her. And I've done a lot of research on cannabis and how it helps, and it helps in so many ways, you know, for epilepsy and pain and nausea. You know, there's even some documentation about how it can help with cancer, and I don't know about cancer cure, you know, I'm not going to speak about that, but I do know that it's important medicine, and I've been a fan for many, many years, and I've used it recreationally, but now to me it's more of a medicine, and to me God put it on this planet, you know, and made this medicine for us to use. And you know, there are pharmaceuticals, obviously, that do help people. And, you know, I'm not, you know, all one-sided. You know, I do like to stay in that gray area. I don't like to be black and white and see the benefits of both. But, you know, you don't have overdoses with cannabis. Nobody's ever died. If they take too much, they just sleep it off. So I'm definitely a big proponent of it. And you know, oh, I can remember one story. This one girl told me about her dad and that he was having so much trouble with not eating and the nausea, and she gave him some cannabis. And she said, in the middle of the night, here he is raiding the refrigerator. He's so hungry. And we just had this great laugh about it. So, you know, I used to tell patients, you know, I wish we could provide you with cannabis, you know, marijuana, you know, but unfortunately we can't. And if you could find it on the street somewhere, my advice is go for it. You know, don't say we had this conversation, but, you know, I was that much of a believer in it. And I don't know that anybody really took me up on it, but, you know, I definitely am a proponent of it.
Yeah, it's so many people are using it for wonderful things. And you happen to live in a state where it's very accessible. Very accessible.
Yes, thank God.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you can just go to a dispensary and pick up what you like and, you know, have a little fun with it, you know.
Right, absolutely.
Everybody else has to, we have to sit here and sort of, you know, we're limited as to what we can get. You also talk about being into Chinese herbs and acupuncture. I am so into that. I've been doing acupuncture for a good 28 years, and Chinese medicine. I love Chinese medicine because there's Chinese medicine for everything. Things that Western medicine hasn't even begun to address, Chinese medicine has it. So do you use it regularly, or you just use it when you're having an issue?
Well, it's funny you should talk about that because I actually have an appointment for acupuncture after we speak at like 9:30. And I am totally on board with Chinese medicine. I had an experience of hurting my back in 2011, and I didn't have insurance at the time. And a friend told me about this acupuncturist, and I could not even stand straight. It was a herniated disc. And after the first treatment, I could stand up without pain. But I had to keep going. And I did it for months, and I healed my herniated disc. And, you know, if I had gone Western medicine, they would want to be operating on me, and I don't want to go that route. So, and I've been going to acupuncture, years now. I'm thinking maybe 5 years. And now because I'm aging and having difficult problems here and there, I decided to go weekly. And it's making a huge difference for me.
Yeah, that's what I do. Actually, I've been going weekly for many years, and I just started going biweekly because I didn't really need it every week. But for me, it's maintenance. You know, it keeps my chi flowing, which my chi tends to get jammed up very easily. So acupuncture keeps my chi flowing. Yeah, I don't know why. It just does. It jams up in different places.
of us, you know, it's living in the world.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. How did you deal with the death? What was that like when you had to grieve these deaths?
Oh, wow. Good question. I have cried so many tears over patients because even though I knew that they were going to a better place, it was my loss. It was, I fell in love with my patients, you know. Not everybody. I mean, certainly the ones that were on service for a long time. And I remember Lil. I wrote about her a lot in my book. And she was such a sweetheart. And when she was getting really close, we called in continuous care. And, you know, they're there 24/7. And I was tempted to go the day that she died, and it was my day off, and I didn't do it, you know. And I have regret about that I wasn't there for her at that moment of her death. But, you know, I didn't really know when she was going to die. And also there was a part of me that I needed to protect myself and have some balance to separate myself. But, yeah, I cried lots of tears, you know, because you know, I'm a human being, and I allowed myself to get close to people because that was who I was, you know, and I didn't want to close off the love. And when you have love for somebody, there's grief when they die. Even though we have the spiritual aspect of ourselves that really knows that death is an illusion, the humanness of who we are and the love that we have, you know, I had lots of grief. And, you know, luckily I was able to, you know, grieve appropriately and had support, and I had the beach. And I spent a lot of time at the beach with my grief, and it helped to heal me because the salt water and just being at the ocean, the negative ions, it helped me. But I definitely had lots of tears.
So you had to go through full grieving processes with each patient?
Yeah, well, not each, because some I didn't get so close to because they were on service for so long and I didn't get that strong connection. But yeah, definitely each patient that I got close to that were on service for a while, I had grief. And it was varying because some patients, they were my favorites and they were the toughest ones to lose. And then, but you know, there was a lot of times that it was like, you know, it's such a relief because they're out of pain. And it was especially for my mom when she had died, there was truly a relief that like she's no longer in pain. And for a lot of my patients, it was like that. And a lot of the families said that too, you know, amongst their grieving was the sense of relief that they were freed now from a bad body that no longer worked for them.
Yeah, I definitely feel like that. I think it is. And it's, you know, if you've never, for people who have never seen someone die, it is a very, very peaceful thing, you know?
Mm.
And then when they die, they're just, they look like they're sleeping. It's, you know. So, yeah, I saw that a few times. Most of the time I was just sitting there and attending to them and making them feel better and talking to them, rubbing their shoulders, you know, just touch.
Yes.
They needed that touch. So were there any other of your patients that contacted you afterwards?
Yes. Actually, one of my favorite stories was about Carolyn, and she was on service for many, many years. And one of the really cool things about her was when I first became her nurse and I first walked in the door, she saw this, my aura, and she said to herself, oh, this is going to be interesting. And so she was very spiritual and we had a great connection. But one of the things that I said to her was, okay, Carolyn, how about if you give me a sign that after you pass, that's going to be a sign that you are well and that there is something that exists, even though I kind of knew, but, and so she said, okay, it'll be yellow flowers. So shortly after, maybe a couple months or so, my husband and I were driving along this bike path along the beach, and there were two rows of yellow flowers that lined the path. And I was like, oh, my God, Carolyn, this is you. And I felt her presence, and I got the chills, and I'm getting chills now just talking about it. And because it's, you know, because I have this skeptical part of me that's like, yeah, is this really for real, you know? And so I just loved it, and I called her daughter afterwards, and we had to talk about her mom. And so that was the beautiful thing. And at the time, I was going through a lot of stuff with my mom. So, but yeah, that was a great story. Another story was, my patient, Lily, she came back. It was really an interesting thing because shortly after she died, and she was one that I was really, really close to. And, there was this envelope, her Christmas card. I found her Christmas card in the box of supplies, and it was like, where did this come from? Because it was like 6 months later. So there was that story, and I felt her presence at that time. And you know, I'm more of a clairsentient, so I feel energy, and I just feel the presence. And I just really learned to trust that they came back to me in different ways. Dorothy came back with, you know, there was my altar, and the cloth was moving. And I was like, whoa, how did this, you know, and it was Dorothy, you know, that came back. And then another time that was my friend and I were working, doing Reiki exchanges on each other, and she felt the presence of one of my patients. And she said, oh, my God, it's this patient, Billy, and she really wants you to know that she's here with you right now. And she wanted to thank you, and she was just so insistent. So my afterlife messages came through other people as well. And so it was really cool. There's so much to talk about with this, but it's like so many different stories. And I tried to relay that in my book, because as I was going through my nursing career and my hospice career, and these things were happening, I would just journal it, because it was like, oh my God, this is just too cool. I got to remember this. And also somebody had said to me, oh, Mary, you should be writing this. You should write a book about this. And I thought, well, maybe someday, but I don't know. And the first story was actually 1997, and the story about Ken. And he was actually the first story in my book. And I really felt a connection to him. And he felt the presence of his loved ones, and the angels were there. And so I really wanted my book to be a really positive book about that death is nothing to be feared. And so I really tried to relay that, and had a lot of help with it. But I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from people that are reading my book. So I feel that it was my calling to get this book out, just for people to know, you know, what it's like to be a hospice nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, I think it's important for people to understand it. I had a situation where I was visiting a man, and 1 week his live-in girlfriend, he was an older man, his live-in girlfriend said, don't come because he's hallucinating, and we've got to take him to the doctor, and, you know, he's seeing things, and he's really scared. He's really scared of it. And I said, what is he seeing? And she said, he's seeing ladies in white flying, were they flying in or flying out? Flying out of the room, ladies in white. And he thought they were church ladies, but they were angels, you know what I'm saying? Mm. And shortly after that, he passed. But, you know, but they were trying to treat him for hallucinations. And, you know, people who are passing are in and out of this realm. They're talking to other people. They're seeing other things. And I think it's important that we understand that and comfort them instead of, you know, making them freak out over what they're experiencing. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I've had so many experiences with patients of having that, and it was really good that I was able to say to them, this is very common, you know, that, and I would explain to them that they are seeing their loved ones from the other side, and their angels are coming to be with them, and you know, it really was amazing to me that people really got freaked out about this, but I also saw that they were comforted by me telling them that this is normal. You know, and they're not losing their mind. And a lot of times people would think, well, it was the medication that we're doing it. And I would just say, well, it could be this other thing that's happening. And then I would tell them stories about other patients. So that gave them a lot of comfort. But yeah, you're right. It's, like the story with my mom and so many other patients that have seen their loved ones come to them and the angels. And you know, I guess it is scary for a patient when it first happens, but I think when we could talk them through it and let them know that it's okay and what they're seeing is definitely real, you know, I love that.
Yeah, I do too. And you can't always talk to people about, you know, the spiritual realm. Not everybody gets it, especially people who are religious and have very, very strict beliefs about where they're going and how all that's going to go down for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit harder, but it's wonderful when people are open to this concept because it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful way to help them, you know, through this transition. So, well, Mary, your book is Balboa Press, and where is it available?
Well, it's actually available through Balboa, but also Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Yeah, my girlfriend did this search, and she says, oh, my God, Mary, your book is everywhere. eBay, and, you know, and I don't like to pay a lot of attention to stuff like that. My goal is just to, move forward, taking one day at a time and stuff. But, it's been quite the process.
And
but
you say on the back that 10% of the proceeds will be donated to Women for Women International. So that's really good.
Yes.
Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's called hospicememories.com.
Okay, perfect. Well, this was a great, great conversation.
Oh, my gosh. And I had major chills when you were talking about the angels flying. Oh, my God, when you're telling me that story.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, come on. You know, he's like, ladies in white dresses are flying out of the sofa and going through the ceiling. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Oh, boy. So, anyway. It's really been great talking to you. Thank you for writing the book.
Oh.
Thank you for sharing your experiences with us. And I appreciate you being my guest today. It's really wonderful.
Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. It was so great to talk to you. I feel a real connection to you. And thank you for the service that you provided for your hospice patients as a volunteer. That is so beautiful.
You are so welcome. That's really nice. Thank you. Okay, Mary, have a great, beautiful day walking by the ocean.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks. So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com, RANDIFINE.com. And as I say goodbye, may joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye. Have a wonderful day.